you're going to be in Gladstone soon, is that correct?
I mean, very correct, yes. I've just finished three all around the country.
Yeah.
I've just done like a week in Melbourne, a week in Sydney, Perth, Adelaide, Canberra.
Right.
Yes, and then the Gold Coast. So now we're taking it into regional Queensland, and then we'll be taking it to regional New South Wales and so on and so on.
So I kind of just wanted to know how magic started for you.
Well, I started magic when I was 12 years old. I was a very shy, introverted little boy, believe it or not. And then now people watch my shows on TV or online, and they go, no, I'm very shy. And that was because I had a lot of learning difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't learn to read until I was 12 years old, which was very challenging. And that was compounded by the fact that my mother was at the time a school principal. So she was pulling her hair out. She was thinking, oh my gosh, you know, why isn't my son connecting, or what's going on? And they took me to all these specialists. They thought there was something wrong with my hearing, and then they thought there was something wrong with my eyesight. They actually gave me glasses. They asked me to read the alphabet out on the letters, and I couldn't read them, so they misdiagnosed me and gave me glasses. I could see very, very clearly. I just couldn't read. And one day my mother takes me to the local library, which of course is the last place a child who can't read wants to be.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at books with pictures, because that's all I can do. And I stumbled across a book with these old vaudevillian posters and pictures of very famous magicians and their magic shows. And if you've ever seen these 1900s, late 1800s vaudevillian posters, they're beautifully hand illustrated, and they look like gorgeous comic books.
Yeah.
That's what they really look like. And so I'm fascinated by the drawings and the pictures and the colours, and my mother comes over and she says, what are you looking at? And I point to a picture. Anyway, we take the book home, and every night before bed, she'd read these stories and adventures and escapades of these great magicians and their tales around the world to me. And in the back of the book, it was magic tricks. But to learn the magic tricks, my mother had to very patiently sit with me, analyse each word, you had to break it down, look at the little illustration, understand when it would say, put your left little pinky here, your right index finger there, now use your thumb, blah, 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 blah. Very complicated. But to learn the trick, you have to analyze the words, each word, look at the illustration, then apply it to your own hand. And so by breaking down words and looking at it with pictures, I learned to read very, very quickly. And the side effect was I gained a unique skill, which was to perform a little magic trick. It was making a coin disappear for my father. He's a structural engineer, made the coin vanish, and he said to me, how did you do it? And then all of a sudden, I realized I could do something that my father, the genius, who I thought was a genius, could not do. And so that's how my ventures into magic and illusion started. But it was very humble beginnings. It was just learning to read. And of course, that trick my mother performed, which was tricking me into reading the book, has stayed with me and now I'm an avid reader. I've written my own books, but more importantly, I think it was really about just about building confidence.
Yeah.
And once I could read, you know, reading meant to writing and spelling, but more importantly for me, it was really the confidence and that kind of shadow that was following me.
Mm-hmm.
The kid who couldn't read, who was considered very, very dumb, had lifted, and that was important for self-esteem.
On top of it helping you gain self-esteem, did you find that it helped you in school as well, knowing who you were and finding something that sort of sets you apart?
Absolutely, because from a very young age, from 12, before 12, as soon as I went to school, I was put into all these specialist classes, and I was considered, you know, behind. So automatically, I was put in a position where I was different. So now what magic did is now I could read, now I had the spelling ability. I was behind the other students, but at least I was kind of catching up quickly. I already embraced this kind of hobby of magic, which allowed me to be, embrace the uniqueness. I think that's probably more to the point. It allowed me to do other things that, magic allowed me to do things that look out of bounds. I mean, I learned how to eat fire, and I learned how to, you know, performed all these, you know, wonderful effects. And so, you're right, I did embrace the difference, the uniqueness.
Did you ever think back then that it would land you to where you're at today?
That's a double answer question, yes and no. And I'll tell you why. When I was a child, I dreamt of having my own television special. So now my you know, 14, 15 years old.
Yep.
The problem was that there'd never been an Australian magician with their own prime time TV special. There'd been Australian magicians on TV, but, you know, like on the morning show or whatever it may be, but not with their own show. So it was always, the dream was always really, really big. So it's kind of like being an actor in Australia and looking at, you know, like Tom Cruise or looking at, you know, Robert De Niro and being an Australian going, well, I can't do that because you have to be in America to be able to do that. But in Australia, we do have actors like Mel Gibson and you know, Heath Ledger we had and Chris Hemsworth. So Australians can look to other Australian actors and go, oh, no, you know what, you can go to Hollywood and you can make it. You can do it too. You can be like NXS or AC/DC or Kylie Minogue.
Mm.
As an Australian, there was not any other Australian magician that had really made it, like, at a really successful, I don't want to offend people, but at a really successful Australian level, let alone international level. And when I mean successful, I mean like, you know, like when you see these stars that are all over the TV or the magazines or, so the dream seems too big.
Yeah.
And so my only pinpoint was kind of people like David Copperfield or David Blaine, who the international performers. So, the answer to your question is, and I'm giving a long-winded answer, but I think it's good to give context, was no. I didn't think, oh, well, I thought that was kind of impossible. But on the flip side, it was my dream to have my own television special, and that's what I did. So then the other answer to the question is yes, because that's what I fought for, that's what I planned for. It didn't like happen by accident, or by luck, or chance. It happened by hard work and discipline and perseverance and being tenacious. So it's a yes and a no answer, and I think I like to be really clear on that because I want people to know you can have dreams and they can come true because you set yourself goals, but on the flip side, in the beginning, you know, I didn't think I was in Dancing with the Stars, and I think I was in On the Celebrity Get Me Out of Here. No, there are things I did not think would actually happen. And that's what I mean when I trace back to think of an Australian magician. I've never seen an Australian magician on any of those mainstream type of shows. It never really happened until I commercially broke through, and I say that in all due respect.
Yeah. I'm going to say this on the show. I have bullet points of literally all the things that you've been able to achieve and do, and it's so amazing. Honestly, it's so amazing.
Thank you. You're like very kind.
The first Australian magician to ever create 9 prime TV specials. You've been on, or you have multiple best-selling author books. You've been in movies, so many things. But you hit on something that I just want to touch on really quick. You talked about when you're trying to achieve a goal, it isn't always something that is just handed to you. I'm paraphrasing. Do you have advice for people that have this dream that they're trying to reach and how to continue persevering through the work that it might take to get there?
Yeah, look, this is very different from my fiance, so I'll say people have different takes on it.
Yeah.
She believes, and the only reason I'm saying this is I don't want to say, I'm very, very careful not to offend people, only because I know people view things in a different way and see things differently. So she feels like you set yourself a goal, you set yourself a task, you put work into it, but what should be yours will come to you. The universe will, it will come to you. And I agree with her. But I have come from a thought process of a little bit, you don't deserve it unless you kind of fight for it.
Mm.
So there's a little bit of a different approach here.
Yeah.
Meaning, when it gets really, really hard for me, I keep pushing.
Yeah.
And she will sit back and kind of say, it will come to me. And I'm a bit like, no, I will make it come to me. So there's a little bit of a different approach. And that includes that there's no right and there's no wrong. So I just want to be honest about that. So I really believe in the hard work, you have to put in the sweat equity. You've got to, and I believe that you get tested. You get tested to the point that how badly do you want it? Because it will break you.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be harsh about it, but how bad do you want whatever it is that you're trying to achieve? Because someone else out there really wants it.
Mm.
So it's going to push you to your limit.
Yeah.
If you don't really want it, you've got to think about this because you're going to go through a lot to get there. So how do I do it? I kind of conditioned myself to the, oh, this sounds so dramatic, but I kind of conditioned myself to the pain of it. Like, it's the same way when you go to the gym. You're not going to build muscle unless you actually put in a lot of effort, a lot of work, consistency, dedication, and there's pain. Like, when you lose weight, there's pain associated. And the next day, guess what? You're sore, but you get back up and you go back into the gym, and that consistency, you do it again. And that's the analogy I use with anything that I do. I believe in that pushing through. Okay, so this is a bigger question you might ask you. How do you push through that pain?
Yeah.
You need to understand that incremental steps. So don't look at the mountaintop. Don't look at it from where you are. Because if I was to start magic again and I was 12 years old and I was to say, okay, I need to write, you know, books, I need to buy new specials, I need to get that out of here. It's just way, it's too overwhelming to even grasp or comprehend. So you set little goals, and bit by bit, you chip away at it.
Yeah.
And if you chip away at it, if you do a 1% every day, but eventually, by the end of the year, and you've been consistent, you know, there's 1% that just add up, you know, over and over every single day. So it's slowly tackle it. And then you eventually, if you want to look back, you realize, oh, I've really come far. So little steps at a time is my advice. I'm going to get as well. And I still have to remind myself that, like, if I'm writing a new show, coming up with a new show, or even if you stunt or an escape, I think of the end goal because I think of what I want it to look like in the end, but I've got to now backtrack and re-engineer and then say to myself, okay, we understand the outcome of what you want it to look like towards your end, but now we have to get there. Let's just take it one step at a time because there's many stumbling blocks along the way.
Yeah. Now, on top of all of the things that you've been able to achieve and do, you also get to travel the entire world and do these shows. How do you find traveling?
First of all, I love it. I get to see different cultures. My last TV series was filmed out of Singapore. I traveled to the Philippines and Taiwan and Indonesia and Malaysia. And so I tell you what's beautiful. Like, you go to these different cultures, these different countries. Sometimes I can't even speak the language. Mm-hmm. And yet, if I perform an illusion where something appears or disappears or levitates, no matter what language I speak or don't speak, translate.
Yeah.
Because if something floats through the air, it doesn't matter whether I speak English or Mandarin or whatever it may be, floating through the air. And so that is very, very powerful. So I learned that and I thought, wow, what an art form to be able to really break through without even words or, that's a beautiful thing to be able to travel around the world and present my magic. And even music is a little bit, you can understand the rhythm, you can understand the tune, but still the words, if it's in a different language, it doesn't have as much appeal. And magic does, and that's why there's so much work in magic, especially through Southeast Asia. And of course, then, when you get to travel, you have these different experiences which help with being a more rounded person and a more rounded performer and using those experiences in your performance to relate to people. And it's really just about the human condition in the end. And that's the best way. It's not just presenting a magic trick. It's turning it into a story or mystery or whatever it may be. And travel helps you kind of, well, it does. It opens your eyes to all these. I don't even know. I need to do more travel, but it opens your eyes to the world and the way different people live and how you can relate to people.
Yeah. Now, this is a little bit of it could be a controversial question, I guess. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite country that you've performed in?
Well, of course, performing in my own country is always, you know, this is where I got my start. This is where I broke through. So, obviously Australia, and that's just the controversy there. But next I would say off the list is I love performing in Singapore, but the Philippines was a gorgeous country to perform in, where the people were so friendly, so enthusiastic, and they're very energetic, and they love dance, and they love music, and so they were always very upbeat, and there was just something about them that very, very bubbly and friendly. And so that made performing magic I'm not going to say they were easy, but it just made it really enjoyable. It wasn't about them trying to figure out how the tricks were done. It was just getting, you know, I think that's what it is. As I'm talking, I'm kind of analyzing what you're asking. And I think that's what it is. It's the fact that they were just trying to debunk it. They were just there to enjoy it for its presentation, and that makes it a lot of fun.
You touch on this a little bit in the matter of the work ethic that it takes to do what you do. But for each show, is practicing for it a second nature, or how much practice does it actually take to go into each show?
Well, this show is my best of my best. It's the CM tour. So it's been developed and practiced over 10 years. So what you're going to see is 10 years of work to get, so that's only 10 years to get to that point. And each illusion takes 3 months of preparation, rehearsal, and practice. Each escape takes 6 months of preparation. So, and that's for literally a 2 minute piece. So there's months and months, years and years of work, and then they're constantly refining it and fixing the costumes and the lighting design and the staging. It's a tremendous amount of work. Even now, like, I'm constantly working on new material, developing things, whether it be online or for promotion or even in the show. So it never really stops. Like, you know, like even now, just because I'm doing this new tour doesn't mean that I'm not working on new, they go hand in hand. I'm working on new material at the exact same time. Because I'm just constantly having to, you know, promote the shows or perform for different events. It's a never ending show. And it is a lot of work. Like, sometimes people say, oh, you know, just learn a couple of quick little side tricks. Yeah, that's true. But the way we do it, there's more in it than just a couple of quick, a tardis.
Yeah. Does any part of it make you nervous, whether it be the death-defying escapes that you do, or even just the performing in front of people?
Yeah, I get nervous before every single show. 5,000 people, you know, in national television, international television, whatever it may be, then I'm probably not really that nervous when I, do my own little online videos, because I could just keep filming them. that's the only time I probably don't feel the nerves. But the most that's come about when I'm doing these in the States, where I'm underwater or I have, knives being like above my head, because things have gone wrong in the past, and I've been in the emergency room and had stitches in my chin and, ruptured eardrums and cracked ribs and broken ankles, because I'm doing very often for my TV specials, it's a one-off stunt, and I've had I think it takes 6 months to prep for a stunt, like we'll be planning it, but then I've only got 2 weeks to actually rehearse it, which is ridiculous, and the TV is putting a lot of pressure on me to get it done. And there's a lot of money involved in it, and a lot of people relying on me. And then, lo and behold, I blow my eardrum, and then there's no ending to the show. Or I get a nice bit thrown at me, and hit me in the chin. And so these things go wrong, and so when I do them, they can be quite scary. And what makes them challenging is if you're underwater holding your breath, the last thing you want to do is be nervous and be anxious, because that increases your heart rate. If you increase your heart rate, then you're burning your oxygen, and that's the opposite of what you want to do. So there's a lot of mind games I have to play with myself to convince myself that what I'm about to do isn't dangerous and that I can actually do it. The same way an athlete would, someone's not going to jump out of an aeroplane with a parachute and expect the parachute not to open.
Right.
They've done all their planning, they've done all their training, they're professional, but sometimes it doesn't open.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of risk involved.
All right, now I want to talk specifically about your new show. You just said that this is essentially 10 years of your career and your life that you're putting into this. So it's called Decennium, and you're about to go on tour for the show. What can people expect? What sets the show apart from any other show that you've done? And maybe even you can go, I know that you at the beginning listed some of the places that you'll be going, but where can people expect to see you other than just Gladstone?
Yeah, well, first off, the show is magic and illusions, which is people appearing and disappearing and levitating and teleporting and, I seemingly read people's minds. They're all magic tricks and illusions. Then there's a death-defying escape where I put myself in these crazy positions where, I'm bound into a straitjacket, there's a rack of spikes hanging above my head connected to a burning rope, and I've got to get out before the rope burns through. There's one piece where I got hit by a knife. It's called Stabler. There's 18 kitchen knives dangling above my head. And so all of these crazy stuff, there's a lot of audience participation where people come up on stage if they choose to, and the magic happens under their noses. There's close-up magic. We bounce the ball around and get people selected at random. So it's very immersive. There's a lot of audience participation. People get to examine the apparatus and examine bits and pieces. But visually, it's a treat for the senses. You know, seeing someone literally disappear right before your eyes and reappear 2 seconds later is a pretty powerful thing. So that's what people levitate is really. So that's what it entails. But I always say it's hard to describe because it's even when I do my TV shows, I try to say, oh, no, someone appears and disappears. I'm like, oh, okay. Until you see it, it's very hard to understand what it is. I say, expect the unexpected. Mm-hmm. And I'm traveling all around. I'm going to Caloundra and Bundaberg and Gladstone and Cairns and Mackay and Rockhampton and Maryborough. So what we do is I always say, it's not a national tour unless you go national. Not just doing the major cities. And I've been saying this for years to other performers. It's not just about performing in Sydney or Melbourne and Canberra and Perth. It's about getting out there and really taking it to the people. And that's when you can consider it a national tour. So in terms of the regional aspect, Queensland is the first stop. We've just done a week in Melbourne, a week in Sydney, Perth and Adelaide and Canberra. And now we're bringing it out to, and this is going to travel all around the world. This is what people should realize too. It's not just like some local show. This is going to be everywhere. The TV show based on this show has been all around the world too. So it's pretty special.
We're so excited for it's happening next month. Now, is it a show for all ages, specific age group, all people?
Yeah, it's everybody, 5 to 75, and people always say, what's the demographic? And I say, 5 to 75, and then they say, yeah, but what's the real demographic? Give us a bullseye demographic. Do not come to the show. There's grandparents with grandchildren, there's young parents, kids, there's couples. And I've got to be careful when I say this, because people will be like, oh, really? Yeah, it's so broad. And we write the show that way, so, you know, sometimes it's a little bit dramatic, it's funny, it sometimes can be a little bit very fascinating, and it's a tricky, a little bit sexy part, so a lot of drama. So it combines, like a great film, it combines all these different kind of genres. It's very heavily music-based, and people are surprised how funny it is, too. So, it's all ages, to answer your question.
Now, for Decennium, you are combining 10 years worth of stuff. And any normal show that you've done in the past, has it been this expensive, or do you usually focus on just one perspective of all the things that you do?
I mix a little bit. In all my tours, I always mix a little bit. But this one, specifically, because it is 10 years, it has a lot more variety.
Yeah.
A lot more variety in terms of... And because the material's been developed over 10 years, I can really, like, there's pieces, like I said, where someone levitates or someone teleports, and then there's, like, solids through solids, and then there's the close-up and the escape, whereas in a brand new show, because I've never tested the material, I kind of sometimes play safe, and I go, oh, I know the teleportation effects work really well, so I'm going to write a couple of those. And this show has been huge variety because I've just had years to develop it, and that's what makes this show so special. And this is it. Like, once I've done the material, I'm not doing it ever again. It gets packed away, and then if you don't see it now, you'll never see it. And it will be one of those things where, and I always get emails afterwards, people go, oh, we just missed you, are you coming back? And, you know, I don't spend back for another, you know, 2 years, really. That's how we kind of do it. So if you miss it now, who knows what's going to happen in 2 years. Yeah. So I make sure you catch it now. It's 10 years in the making, Decennium. It's my best of my best. If you've seen a Cosentino show before, then great. You might see some of your favourites. You might not, because, you know, 10 years of material is a lot of material. So it's never the same show. And if you haven't seen a Cosentino show before, well, then you're in for a treat, because it doesn't get any better than this one. It obviously doesn't. I don't know. I'm a little bit scared because I don't know how I'm going to top it next time. I'm not going to tour for another 10 years. Who knows? But it's hard. So this is the one to come and see.
Where can people go to get tickets for the show here in Gladstone?
Yeah, go to my website for Constantino, which is CONCINO.com.au. So Constantino.com.au. Click on the regional tour link and you'll be able to find all the details, ticket information there. Or if you forget on the website, just Google my name, Constantino, or Magician Constantino, and it will come up straight away and look for tickets to the live show.
What would you say to someone who's a non-believer in magic or illusion? So I actually went to your website, and on there I think it said that one of your goals is to make people love magic. But what would you do to someone who doesn't believe in it, or maybe just doesn't even know the first thing about it?
Yeah, I mean, all you have to do is look around and see the beauty in life. I mean, a flower blooming, just sort of walk down the ocean. I just see how beautiful everything, like, really look. Like, open your eyes, open your ears, and look around at all the beauty. I mean, there's just so much magic around it. It's so obvious to me. And I think we get caught up in technology, we get caught up in all these material objects, and it all takes away from what's real. Now, what's funny is in juxtaposition to that is I'm performing a magic show where I'm twisting your sense of reality and creating illusion to baffle you, to trick you, but in essence, to really show you that magic does exist if you actually truly believe. And it does. And the magician and the magic show is really, again, just a metaphor for something much greater than I am. I really want people to love magic as much as me because it's such a beautiful art form and it's executed correctly. And it makes you question things. And the question is probably the wrong word. It makes you just think a little bit. And I think that's important. We're so now overstimulated where we just watch and accept. It's good to question things and it's good to just think about things. And I think magic does that. I think magic does that.
Thank you so much, Klaus. We're so excited for your show coming to Gladstone, and we can't wait to be able to air this interview as well.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me. I cannot wait to see everybody at the show.